Hey, welcome to Legal Marketing Radio from the floor. I'm your host, Stephen Kent. Twice a month, we're bringing you the tips, strategies, resources, and the news and trends you need to effectively market your law firm. This week, we'll be kicking off our first two-part episode. We put together five of our most experienced members from the LaFleur team for a roundtable to talk about some of the challenges facing the legal marketing industry in 2017. Before we get started, we just want to remind you that we have even more marketing resources available for law firms and attorneys, including in-depth blog articles and a free ebook on marketing strategy fundamentals, available on our website at lafleur.marketing. That's LaFleur.marketing. All right, let's dive into the discussion in this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur. Okay, so on the podcast this week, we have our first LaFleur Marketing Roundtable. We have two returning guests that you guys have maybe heard before. We have our content director, Dave Vandewa.
Hey, how's it going?
We have our president and founder, Chip LaFleur.
Hey, Stephen.
And we also have our first remote guest, all the way from Portland, Oregon. We have our managing editor, Kyle McCarthy.
Hi, greetings from the left coast.
And finally, we have our project manager, Fallon Peters.
Hey, Stephen.
So what we wanted to talk about today, I actually got this idea because I came across an article. It's not a brand new article, but it was published in Forbes a few months back. And the name of this piece was A Look at the Top Challenges Facing the Legal Marketing Industry in 2016. So it obviously came out last year. But I really thought that all the points covered in this article really applied, you know, equally as well now. Nothing certainly that would have been, you know, have a 3-month shelf life or anything like that. And it just interested me because, you know, I kind of rarely see legal marketing as its own niche, you know, covered in major publications. So if you want to check out this piece, the writer of the piece is named Larry Alton. He's a business consultant. And again, the title is A Look at the Top Challenges Facing Legal Marketing in 2016. So in this piece, he outlines three major challenges that legal marketing firms face and that law firms kind of face too by extension. You know, it's really a joint effort between the two. And the first of these points, we'll go through them all, but point number one, the first challenge is a lack of client education. And what he's really referring to here, I thought this point could really be taken in two ways. Number one, a lack of education on the part of our clients as legal marketers. And that is something we struggle with, I think, in terms of trying to make our clients understand the need for what we do when they think, you know, so much of their past business is reliant on referrals and word of mouth. But Larry Alton here, in this sense, in this piece, really means a lack of education on the part of the general public in terms of understanding, you know, what differentiates some lawyers from the others and what kind of services they provide. And so he thinks that's a need that legal marketers actually really need to work with lawyers to address. So I'm going to open up the roundtable on this topic, and I think we'll maybe start off with Dave, because I think this is something, and you know, feel free anyone else to chime in as well, but we'll start off with Dave because I think this is something that you've dealt with a lot. So how do we convince attorneys about the value of client education, and also how do we balance the overall educational value of our content with the need for positive ROI when it comes down to the individual level of each piece of content? Because I think a lot of attorneys, you know, they're okay with informing the general public, but they're much more concerned with the immediate return that they're getting on their marketing spend. So how do we strike that balance, and what do you think some of the things that we do in that regard?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think partly the two are one and the same. I think client education and return on investment are very closely intertwined. If you can provide, say, good blog content or good video content that people are going to become educated from, then they're going to be more inclined to read more of your content. They're going to trust you as a thought leader, and then they're going to convert ultimately as a result of you providing that educational material.
Well, I think too that, you know, depending on especially on the practice areas that we're pursuing and that we're working with, you know, if a lawyer handles personal injury cases specifically, you know, it's such a key thing to try to develop that audience and speak to them with regularity, because unlike a lot of other purchasable things, there's not usually like a demographic subset of people that you can really target and say, hey, you know, we want to get our message in front of just this group of people at just this time, because that client list can range from, you know, people who are very young all the way to people who are, you know, well into retirement. You just don't know when something bad is going to happen. And so it becomes prohibitively expensive to try to reach out and spend marketing dollars to get in front of that group, because it's really a bunch of people that you just need to stay in front of all the time. And so, you know, people are interested in learning more about how to take care of themselves, interested in learning more about safety. A lot of people are interested in learning more about, you know, how the law protects them, or ways that it falls short. And so those are generally interesting things that our attorneys can use, that lawyers can use to remain relevant to an audience and then build and maintain that audience so that when something does happen and they do need their services, then they're easy to contact and get in touch with. And they already have built in that trust. They have that trust established with their potential client because the client's really developed a relationship with them, has gotten to know them through this content. And the content was relevant and worth paying attention to because it had a high educational value and was worth reading.
Mm-hmm. One thing, though, I think that we kind of struggle with sometimes is that a lot of clients come to us because, you know, they want new cases right now. You know, some of the clients we've had are, you know, frankly, they, you know, have had a downturn in business and they're looking to kind of turn things around in a quick fashion, you know. So they kind of have trouble seeing the value in, you know, a more long-term kind of educational piece, you know, something that's not as, you know, clickbaity, we'll say, not as call me now. Like, one, for instance, one example I've seen is, you know, we've had occasional pushback from some attorneys on some of the safety tips type pieces where we offer people, you know, advice on how not to get hurt. And I wouldn't say that any client that we've had has ever, you know, obviously our clients don't want people to get hurt, but they've sometimes said, what is the value of this for me right now? You know, how is keeping people from getting hurt and paying money to you guys to do so, you know, that's great, but where, how do I figure my return on investment on this and how am I going to get clients for this? So what do you say to a client in that situation? I mean,
they want to understand the business case of the services that we provide, and that's us, but that's also, you know, if they bring in an in-house writer or something like that. So, you know, if you take us out of the picture, it's a little easier to talk about and then say, make the business case for hiring somebody in-house who's going to provide and write content. You know, there again, you have people coming into the process of choosing who to hire from all different sources, right? And we have mechanisms like pay-per-click, for example, where we can very specifically target a potential client that does a search. We know that we understand their intent because they made a search, or they chose to do a search, and that search is going to give them a link that points back to our client. So that's one scenario. Another scenario is people who subscribe to the content that the attorney produces. So for the second scenario, of course, it's pretty easy to make that case, right? If you could build up a big enough network of people who are consuming your content, you automatically come in with authority and with trust. For the people who would come in through pay-per-click or something like that, where we can do, where we can implement marketing that's really based on a user's intent, I would still make the case for you know, a really strong presence online where it's possible, because those leads are very expensive coming in from pay-per-click. And so if you spend the money on the lead and then the lead looks at your website and pokes around and tries to get to know you and they don't find good content there, they're going to have a very different impression than somebody who comes in and says, hey, not only do these guys know what they're talking about, but they actually care about the community. You know, they're actually giving people helpful information. It's not like everything they publish is, here's why we're such a great law firm and us. They're actually looking out for people. We can tell that they care about their clients and they do things. So, you know, you really are presenting this, you're presenting a face to the business and you're promoting this brand of, hey, this is who we are. And so if you don't have that foundation in place, you go do these other things, you might find some short-term success, but it's going to be markedly smaller and less significant if you don't have the foundation behind it.
Yeah, you're really trying to cultivate a persona for your brand, like you were saying. And no one likes the guy who's like, buy this, call me, do this, dial it, you know, right? What we want to do is we want to have like a conversation. And sometimes that conversation will range from how to prevent things from ever occurring, which I think plays back to your base really well. You have a group of people who maybe they're in an accident and then they're still following you afterwards. They may get into an accident again. It's not like one person only ever has your case or works with your law firm once. Or they may know somebody who gets into an accident. And so there's a lot of really good reasons to market to the people who don't currently have an issue, but who may know someone or who may have an issue in the future, and to also present yourself as someone who cares, as a firm who cares about the well-being of the people who are visiting your site, and providing interesting content, not just to the people who need you and that you need to keep your business running, but to the people who you've already served.
And that's a good point, Dave. There are also other avenues to link ROI and education, just insofar as something like guest blogging or, you know, using Outbrain. So if you're placing this quality content in front of the right kinds of people, you know, with quality CTA, some good links back to your firm's website, then you can very quickly make a piece of educational content into that kind of immediate ROI that so many of our clients seem to be looking for.
I was just going to say it's not an either-or scenario either, right? Because you might have an attorney who says, you know, historically I've gotten all my cases from word of mouth and referral. Well, we're not suggesting that you should stop getting your cases from word of mouth and referral. If anything, we're saying, how can we leverage the great word of mouth and referral, you know, network that you've built and increase that and make that reach more people? And one of the best ways that we have to do that is to generate educational content that the people who you've worked with in the past still find beneficial and useful, and they continue to subscribe to that because of that. Now, that person, they may have stopped working with you, their case might have resolved, and a few years have gone by, and then somebody that they know has been in Iraq, well, they're still getting advertising messaging. You know, if you go down like into Texas, into some of these towns, every town, it's billboard after billboard after billboard of another attorney. And so maybe you had a great experience with one, but it's 5 years later and you keep getting this barrage of ads and you think, well, maybe somebody else is, you know, they're the ones who have really taken over this space. But then, you know, you get this email every month or so that has a bunch of content that's still relevant to you and fits who you are. Now you remember that, whoever you worked with, and it's more likely that you're going to circle around and bring them in.
And just to Dave's point too, you know, we kind of have framed this so far in the realm of, you know, personal injury law, because a lot of our clients work in that field. But also too, if you go into a different field like family law, in a field like that, it's much more straightforward to see how one case can beget other cases. You know, we have one client that we have started working with recently who they handle, you know, estate law cases, they handle bankruptcy, they handle real estate. And in addition to family law, which is kind of their bread and butter practice, and they do this because, you know, a divorce case, for instance, tends to spiral off so many other legal issues. So I think that's even doubly relevant for, you know, some other practice areas where, you know, a personal injury has a little bit of an act of God element, or at least, you know, an act of negligence element that you can't account for. But some other practice areas, you know, that value is even more clear cut. I think also, too, to Dave's point, a lot of the attorneys we've worked with have, you know, kind of expressed a lot of skepticism and disappointment and dislike over some of the attorney advertising they see, the sort of loudest guy in the room tactics. And I think the educational piece is really the differentiator from those kinds of firms. And, you know, and if you build your business up to the point where you're really able to, you know, go after some, you know, major advertising channels, you're going to have that advantage plus the reach that those firms have. Okay, moving on. So another question I wanted to ask, when it comes to educating the general public too, I think one thing that's hard, and this is something that, you know, lawyers who blog or write content deal with and that we do too, and I'll address this to Dave especially because, you know, Dave deals with this every day. How can attorneys, you know, balance the desire to seem professional and highly qualified with, you know, creating content that's readable and digestible to a general audience? You know, I feel like when we write, you know, we constantly kind of come back to the fact that, you know, a 6th to 8th grade reading level is really best for online content. But, you know, legal concepts are complex, and a lot of times even I, when I write, I worry that I'm frankly not simplifying it enough, you know, because it's very difficult to write in this high expertise topics and still write in that everyday vernacular. Plus, we have a lot of lawyers who push back, I think, if we get too casual or conversational in our writing. So how do you balance that in your day-to-day for clients, you know, in terms of professionalism versus simplicity and readability?
One of the things I try to go back to all the time is putting yourself in the potential client's shoes. I think in our line of work, working with attorneys, and certainly for the attorneys themselves, you can very easily get into a headspace where you get very technical and where that becomes your sort of default mode of communication. And there is a very fine line, I think, and it's very, very difficult to navigate that line between being someone who appears to be professional, who appears to really know what they're talking about, who appears to be an expert, and someone who you can relate to. I think that's something that we struggle with as writers, and then something that, the attorneys struggle with as well. And like you said, there are some techniques you can use. You can look at your reading level. You can look at, you know, performance of different blogs and how they're structured and everything else, and kind of narrow down what it is that any particular demographic is looking for. But your best defense against going too far one way or another is to really put yourself in the shoes of the people who will be reading that content and thinking through what would they need, and what would they understand. And if you can start with that, then you can add technical as you need to become more professional and seem more like an expert.
Right. So, you know, having audience personas too would play a big role in that.
Oh, definitely. And I think Kyle could probably speak to that really well as well.
Yeah, audience personas are something that I think every firm should try to really establish very clearly very early on, as soon as they decide to make the choice to start doing more content marketing. It's very difficult to market to people, to a specific audience, if you can't all agree on who that audience should be. So as firms go about creating personas, it shouldn't be a one-man or a one-woman show. It should be a collective effort of everyone in the office. That includes, you know, your legal assistants, your paralegals, your receptionists. Take a look at the objective data. Take a look at your analytics. Take a look at your caseload over the last 3 years. Investigate the demographics. How old are these people? What are their financial backgrounds? What sort of industries are they in? And then you you carefully piece all of these things together. And you come up with these delightful little narratives that everyone in the office is going to be familiar with, and it's going to dictate exactly who the ideal client is. I know, Stephen, we hear a lot from our clients about they don't necessarily want clients; they want the right clients. And if you don't have personas, it's going to be very difficult to get the right client.
Got it. That's a great point. Okay, so another question I want to ask. And I think we deal with this a lot too. When it comes to educating the public, in terms of especially the legal system and aspects of cases, you know, how certain cases work, and I'll address this to both Chip and Dave. Do you think that there's a limit? I think sometimes attorneys wonder, you know, am I giving too much away? You know, am I making materials that someone can use to self-educate and then just handle their case without me? So how do you kind of balance that competing interest as well?
I guess I don't even think of it as a competing interest, really. You know, when a law firm comes to us and says, hey, can you help us get more clients? I tell them everything that we're doing, and we're pretty open about it. And if they want to go and find a team of people who can deliver the product that we deliver and bring it in-house and get them up to speed to do it themselves, that's awesome. All right, like, go for it. It's really hard to do, right? I mean, that's what we spend every day doing, and we work on this, and we've built this skill set. We built the skill set, frankly, by working with a variety of different content or different clients. We've refined it over time and improved it. And so if they go try to build that themselves, it's going to take them a lot longer. It's going to be a lot more expensive. And that's on the marketing side, right? And I would even, you know, I would tend to elevate, you know, someone who's a practicing lawyer a few steps, you know, at least above that in terms of the education required in order to be successful. And so you know, do they need to keep their playbook secret? I mean, there's some things that they don't want to release to the public. You know, maybe they work with a doctor or a specialist with some regularity. You know, you wouldn't want to put that out there because defense attorneys are going to see that and find out. So there is, you know, there's some degree of balance there, but that's just from the perspective of, you know, what a defense attorney, for example, you know, if we're working with a personal injury lawyer or something like that, that's where to hold back and be careful. But you're not going to put out content that causes, you know, a potential client to say, hey, you know, I could probably litigate this myself.
Yeah.
and even if you did, you know, even if there was this crazy situation where somebody had a question for you and they would have spent a couple $100 for a few minutes of your time, you know, an hour of your time, that's going to be offset by so much by the number of people who are going to see this and feel more comfortable hiring you, you know, tenfold or hundredfold. And it's going to be the needle in the haystack where a person says, hey, I can do this myself. And I think the same thing holds true for competing attorneys too. You know, competing attorneys, they're not going to get your whole playbook. You know, if you're good at what you do, you're good at it because you bring this whole game plan with you. You know, it's everything from end to end. You know, the person who, the receptionist at the door who answers the phone, your paralegals, your team, and of course, you know, the attorney's expertise. And so you're not going to give away your playbook to another attorney. You know, how many books and volumes of, you know, information been written about how to run a successful law firm, how to be a better lawyer, you know? And so I don't think that I don't even think there's a risk there.
I totally 100% agree with that. You could never show too much of your hand, aside from maybe some of the stuff that carries like personal information risk. That would be the only thing where, like you were saying, if you share the name of the doctor you use, like that would be sort of a no-no. That would be showing a little too much of your hand. But aside from that, I think back to my my own habits online when I'm doing research on whether it's best practices or new strategies that we're trying to get involved with, or if I'm trying to find statistics to support a piece or a strategy that we're going to implement. And what I do is I'm looking for something, and maybe that first time I land on a site, I had this recently with Ahrefs, where I landed on Ahrefs' blog, found some really cool content there that I sort of utilized when I was ideating. And I just kind of pilfered the content and wrote the piece that I was working on. And 2 weeks later, I'm working on a piece, and boom, I land back on Ahrefs again. Really good content. And this time I go, oh, that's Ahrefs again. And then I maybe steal some of that content and use that to assemble some more data. And 2 weeks later, boom, there I am again on Ahrefs. And I think, man, here I am 3 times now. These people are great. And I sign up for their newsletter because I'm interested in hearing what they have to say every week now. And so then my investment with this particular, you know, entity is derived from the fact that they're showing their hand. You know, they laid down, one of the things that we were looking at was how to outsource. You know, we outsource some of our writing tasks into freelance writers. And they basically laid out from start to finish how they hire, how they assign things, it was like a huge, enormous piece. That's awesome. It's so awesome. And we've referred back to that as we refined our processes as well. And I'm hooked, man. I'll read Ahrefs all day. Well, go ahead.
And as a result of that, not as a direct result of that, but we also, you know, pay Ahrefs to use their tool.
Right.
And it just reinforces their thought leadership position, you know, because you're using that content and you return there. And then you sign up for the newsletter. Now you're going to continue to get that content, which continues to reinforce our decision to purchase the software.
Mm-hmm. I can attest to just from seeing our analytics that in general, I find that our clients that are the most fearless about, you know, being generous when it comes to educating the public get the best results for their content. You know, a few of our clients, you know, they've written stuff themselves that saying, you know, look, if you have an easy, simple divorce and you want to do it yourself, here's where you get the form. Here's basically what you need to do. If you have children or if you have a lot of assets or various, you know, complexities, this probably isn't going to work for you. But if not, you know, you may not need to work with an attorney. And, you know, that's something that I, as a content writer, I'm always hesitant to do people, but I've seen attorneys do it for us, you know, give us pieces of content that have this. And, you know, those are the clients that I've seen perform the best in terms of, you know, how the content does and the organic traffic that they get.
Or do you even want that client, you know? Like, educate that client. Because, like, otherwise they're going to come in, they're going to spend $200 with you, and then that's it. And they're not going to have, you know, a great experience because there just wasn't that much interaction. If they want to do it themselves and they're capable of doing it, then go for it.
Yep.
You know?
This is like the consultation. So we do customized consultation request email campaigns where someone arrives on your page, on your website. They want to get in touch with you, so they fill out a contact form. And then we automatically fire emails to that person telling them a little bit about the firm, telling them, here's a checklist of things you should probably have before you ever come and talk to us. And, you know, here's some directions of how to get to our place. And if you need anything, here's who to contact. And can you imagine the consultation that person receives versus mm-hmm. someone who just walks in off the street? Right. So client education isn't just in the interest of, you know, your potential clients. It's in your interest, too. The more you educate your potential clients, the more efficient you're going to be in-house. The more involved your potential clients or future clients are going to be in your firm, and you're going to get loyal, trustworthy. It's going to be a great relationship that you're going to build with them.
And just to piggyback off that real quick, I think it is especially important to have this educational content for firms who are dealing in practice areas like family law or like tax representation, where these issues are not they're not going to be occurring in a vacuum. They're likely going to be, it's going to take some time to resolve these issues, and there are going to be several different components. So with family law, you know, there's obviously maybe some counseling in the beginning, and then through trial separation, divorce, alimony, child support, et cetera, et cetera. Same thing with tax representation. You know, if you haven't filed in years or if you owe a truly exorbitant amount, it's not like one article or one piece of content is going to solve the problem all by itself. So I think if you are persistent and you write about one practice area, but all of the intricacies of that practice area, you're going to have a lot of repeat visitors, and you're going to build a lot of that trust through that thought leadership. And it's much in the same way that Dave mentioned, you know, like an email drip campaign. Someone signs up for that, they're going to get a lot of information about a fairly specific practice area, and I think that is really, really helpful for them. And again, like Dave said, it's going to prepare them a lot better for their free consultation.
Definitely. Okay, we've got to wrap up for the week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks with the second part of our roundtable discussion. For now, we want to thank Dave, Chip, Fallon, and Kyle for being on this podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. We hope you enjoyed our roundtable discussion. And don't forget to check back in 2 weeks to hear part two, including discussions about SEO and the questions attorneys often raise about the value of content. As always, if you've got a question for the podcast or a suggestion, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing. See you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur.